Roger that, Mike November Tango. Your code 41 acknowledged. P Division, code 41. P Division, code 41.
Long Pig by Peter Turnbull. Dramatized by Stephen Mulrine. Long Pig.
About this one then, kiddo. A feast is for laughter,
and wine maketh merry, but money answereth all things.
Too true.
Ecclesiastes 10:19, to save you guessing. Started the Herald crossword game.
Morning, Sarge.
Sarge.
I must have seen you coming. Milking too?
Thanks, Tony. Quiet night?
Yeah, nothing of note. Burglary at the West End. Car full of stolen goods. Not connected as far as we know. You didn't bring in the paper.
No opportunity, really. You can stop off on the way home. So, you've nothing to hand over?
Not a thing.
Well, 6:02.
Aye, Sarge.
That's it. If anything happens now, it's all down to me.
No reason why it should, Sarge. If it hasn't happened by 4 a.m, it won't happen till midday.
Yeah, that's what you told me when I started in here. CID. Yep. Oh, right. Let me get the details. Malcolm, chuck us a pen. Right. Right. And, that's been verified. Okay. Yeah. Okay, thanks. We'll get onto it now.
Trade?
You could say that. That was control. Just coming from Tango Delta Foxtrot. They've attended a code 41.
Oh.
Yeah, in the East End, Parkhead, Quarry Bray Street. An incineration job.
Same as before?
Apparently so. Real Sunday roast. Only this time the hands were nailed to the floor.
That's new. Aye, it tends to be like that with these guys. They get bolder all the time. Or just worse.
Papers will lap it up. Torchman strikes again.
Well, that's three since the turn of the year.
Sarge, do you want me to stay on? Lend a hand.
I'd appreciate it.
Well, CID, is it safe to go?
Yeah, it is. You got a strong stomach?
Seen this kind of thing before?
Fires, yeah, plenty of times.
No, I mean this thing upstairs, this thing that's waiting for us.
No.
Well, if it gets too much, leave the room. I can tell you this. It's them like the other two I will be hanging around.
I saw the photographs.
No, the same, son. Photographs don't smell for a start.
Hello, is that the police?
Yes, sir.
I'm the station officer, senior fire officer at the Locus. I called you in. I'm afraid the circumstances are clearly suspicious. The incident took place in the room to your right there, the sitting room. You'll see what I mean by suspicious. Two seats of fire in opposite corners. One deceased adult in the centre of the room. No other persons in the flat. The fire is out and there's no danger of further combustion. This is for the notebook.
Yes, no, the drill.
Do you mind if I have a note of your names?
Yes, that's it. DC Alabama, P Division.
Thanks. Well, I'll make your post 6:32.
Agreed.
So, it's all yours, gents. We'll be hereabouts for an hour or so yet. I'll take that time to get the appliances packed up. But we won't need to come into the close again. We've evacuated the entire close. That's them all out on the pavement. The ones in the top flat were in the middle of a bender. They're still holding their cans of super lager. Probably think this is all down to the DTs. Anyway, they're wanting back in. And they can come back in as far as the fire service is concerned. But I've kept them out of the close in case you wanted to close yourself.
Thanks, we'll look around a bit, then decide about that. But I won't forget.
Right, Sergeant. I'm off now. Thanks. Great, son. Come on.
Oh, Jesus.
Are you all right, lad?
God, is that really it?
You'd hardly believe it was human, would you? Take a look at it, then go outside. Come back when you're ready.
I don't think I'll ever be ready. That head...
Like some sort of alien, I know. They swell up like that sometimes. Is there any consolation? You never get used to this.
Sir,
Look at the nail. See, in the floor.
Aye. Obviously worked one hand free. We'll have to wait for Dr. Reynolds, but that might mean he was conscious.
But surely he couldn't have.
He could have done. Probably did. Probably pulled his hand through the nail. If you're frightened enough, you'll be surprised what strength you can find. Couldn't get the other one free, though.
Do you think that means the other two were conscious as well? If it's the same bloke.
Torchman? Nah, it doesn't mean anything. All we know about the other two is that they were alive. The pathologist couldn't say whether they were conscious or not. This looks different, though. You wouldn't pull your hand through a nail if you were unconscious.
And that smell?
Roast pork.
Oh, for God's sake, Sarge!
That's the smell, isn't it? Long pig. That's what the cannibals in the South Seas call human flesh. It's supposed to taste like pork. Look. Look up.
Sarge?
The ceiling. See it? That yellow patch. It's like a chip pan fire. That's the body fat. It gets carried up by the smoke.
I think I'll go inside if you don't mind.
Oh. I thought you guys had finished here.
Some sight, eh?
Aye.
Bleeding hand told me to go back up the stairs. Said I should look at it again. So this time I leave my own turn instead of running away. I'm building up to it. Well, I'm supposed to be. Don't think I'll go back in. I've never seen anything like it. You want a cigarette? It's against the rules, but who cares?
No thanks. Look, I don't normally, but do you think I could have a cigarette?
Ah, sure.
Frankly, I don't give a damn about polluting the locus. My sergeant. Thanks. My sergeant has his own way of coping. Happy to find one.
Been in the police a while?
A few years. Just going CID though.
I know. I've been in a fire service for 2 years. Don't think I'm sticking. So it takes more out of you than it puts in.
I'm good feeling. I dare say we're still young enough to move on. I mean, my sergeant and there. He can take it, because he has to. He's got nowhere else to go. Jesus. Long pig. Talk about sick. Oh, is that a friend's heart?
Don't drop the packet, lads. You shouldn't smoke here, you know that. I've had a flask of light, a wee dram at a hand. Anyway, when you're done, nip the fight to lose on the street. You happy to stay here, Tony?
Yes, Arch.
Ecstatic. Right. I'm going to tell those folks they can return to their homes, but not to leave them. I'll need to interview them all. Don't let them in here, obviously. Keep them moving past and don't ask them any questions. Then it's seen at the crimes and the pathologists. Okay?
Right, sir.
Guy's a human being, anyway.
You have to think of this as a thing, I suppose, to be able to deal with it. Gets through the professional detachment, doesn't it?
It does, though I'm surprised to hear that from you, sir.
Well, it's the great leveller. I mean, death by fire. It doesn't much matter what you look like in life. Charged to this degree, all your features are destroyed. The body shrinks, the skull expands. It's a grisly job at any time. I'll freely confess to you, Sergeant, this is the one form of death that really frightens me.
Yeah, me too.
I can think of very few worse ways to go. Professionally, I see as many varieties of death as I'm sure you do, but this one never fails to reach me. Yes. Any idea of his identity?
He's believed to be one William McBride of 227 Quarry Bray Street, Parkhead. That's going by the name on the door only. We're still to satisfy ourselves that this is McBride, but according to the neighbours, there was just one occupant and he called himself McBride.
Mm. William McBride, as in the song. Do you know it? Flowers of the Forest, not the border ballad. The one about the death of a soldier in the Great War. Well, good morning, William McBride. Do you mind if I sit by your side? I can't recall it in detail. Oh, yes. I see from your grave you were only 19 when you died. Was it quick and clean, or was it slow and obscene?
Beat the drum slowly, play the pipe low.
Well, that's the one, a beautiful piece of work. I remember from the folk clubs when I was an undergraduate. So, here lies William McBride. Now, I can't tell you if he was only 19, but my guess is a little older.
The neighbours described a man in his middle years.
Oh, you know, the mouth's always my first port of call. It's a real mine of information. Age, ethnic group, social class even. All from the mouth. Facial appearance also.
It's amazing.
Oh, it is documenting and observing. No more amazing than your work, I should think. Mr. McBride's upper left molars are missing. Front and bottom incisors. He would have had a toothless appearance in life. Most likely did all his chewing on the right side.
Possibly false teeth.
There's no evident dental work. He may well have lost his incisors because of trauma. A man with a violent history, perhaps. At the low end of the social scale, not bothered about his appearance. Now, if this guy lost a tooth, he just accepted it. Quite possibly no dental records. Anyway, I'll extract a tooth, an upper molar, I think, and do a cross-section. And that'll give us his age, plus or minus a year.
Well, that's always something.
And I'll send the lower jaw to the School of Dentistry, of course, on the off chance. If he has had any NHS or even prison work done on his teeth, he'll be able to match them. That's only if they have records of William McBride, mind. They can tell you if they're his or not, but they can't search for matching records. Not as sophisticated as you chaps.
Fair enough.
Now, Sergeant Sussex, the problem with immolation victims is that we have to decide whether it was a living person or a corpse that was burnt. The fire might have been sent to conceal the actual cause of death, for example. And he was nailed to the floor.
Indeed, sir.
Well, that's not like the other two. This torchman, as I see they're calling him.
No, they appear to have been overpowered, certainly, but no enforced restraint. They were very frail, though, elderly. Mr. McBride presumably had some strength left.
What's your reckoning of the cause of the fire, Sergeant?
Well, sir, I've seen of the crimes people are on.
No. Your own observation. I mean, I made mine, but I'd appreciate your point of view. Two seats of fire, close to the victim.
Well, in the other two cases, there was only one seat of fire, but again, close to where the victim was found.
Yes. Nailed to the floor, and two seats of fire. I was making sure of this one.
He was doing that, all right.
Harvey Breyer's thinking about. But he made no noise.
No reports of any. Somebody spotted the flames, that was the first alarm. Apparently a window blew out, but no, nobody heard any screams or anything like that.
I see. Well, that would suggest he was already dead, or at least unconscious when the flames reached him.
But he did pull one hand free. We thought that indicated he was conscious.
No, not necessarily. Now, if the nails were driven in at a shallow angle and inclined towards the body, as indeed they were, then heat contraction would have been enough to pull the hand away. And the real problem with severe burns is that they can cause damage to the body, which can easily be mistaken for anti-mortem wounds. This looks interesting. You care to have a look?
I know,
but look at this. Mr. McBride's throat, those black streaks, those are carbon deposits. Means he was still breathing when the fire was about him. And the colour of the blood...
looks fairly normal. Normal cherry red.
And that's the second indication that he was alive. It'll also be polluted by carbon if he was burnt to death. We'll have to do a lab test, check the level of carboxyl hemoglobin in the blood. But I'll get the results to you ASAP, along with the estimate of his age.
That'd be much appreciated, sir.
Strictly off the record, can you remind me, the other two victims of this so-called torch man, They'd sustained a fractured skull, had they not?
Yes, they were thought to have been overpowered and knocked unconscious.
Mind you, it wouldn't take a great deal of force to fracture an old man's skull. Bones are very brittle. Perhaps we'd better see if our friend here has a fractured skull.
I suppose that might explain why there was no shouting or screaming.
Yeah, he might have been blessedly out cold when the flames reached him. I do hope so.
God.
I'm sorry about this. I'm afraid the skin loses its pliability. It's known as heat rigor. It's not a pretty sign. Ah. Now, here we have a fractured skull.
Same method.
You chaps do tend to rush fences, Mr. Sussock. No, the problem here is that this could be a thermal fracture, not anti-mortem trauma. As you can see for yourself, the body reacts in strange ways when it's exposed to intense heat. Mostly it contracts. The spine arches, the knees bend, the hands, if they're free of course, come up into what's termed the pugilistic pose. Forearms at chest height, fists clenched, etc. But when all that's happening, the brain tissue is expanding, sometimes with so much force that it cracks the skull from the inside.
I wouldn't have thought that was possible.
Oh, it is. I'm sure you've boiled an egg. Notice how the shell sometimes cracks when the hard-boiled meat of the egg expands.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Well, it's the same principle exactly. You might call it another example of heat trauma resembling anti-mortem injuries. In this particular case, though, the injury is extremely localized, which suggests it was anti-mortem. Look, you see how the skull's depressed here, just behind the ear. I think it's safe to say he sustained a severe blow there, which didn't kill him, but may well have rendered him unconscious.
So it does look like the same method.
Yes. Also, there's some tissue damage, which I'll need a closer look at. I mean, closer than this hand glass. But there's some indication that the blow to the skull might have preceded death by a matter of days.
Days?
Yes. Possibly as much as 48 hours.
Dear God. I mean, pinned to the floorboards, alive, maybe drifting in and out of consciousness.
Yes. Slow and obscene, I'm afraid. You know, I think William McBride here's beginning to tell us a tale of awesome content. Well, that's your job, Mr. Sussock. But let's see what the stomach can add to it.
Oh.
Yes. Empty. I half expected that. Empty, empty, empty. Nothing on his stomach whatsoever. It will take 2 days for that stomach to empty like this. Oh. Oh, this isn't just a murder story, Sergeant. There are times when early retirement looks a very attractive prospect.
So, after that, I decided to try headspace analysis. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's basically a method whereby debris is placed in a confined space and allowed to give off vapor. And then the vapor
now,
is
Mr.
then...
Mr. Barnaby, if you could just give me your conclusions.
Oh, yes. Of course, sir. But I thought I'd just explain how the vapor is drawn off and analysed. Anyway, I used a piece of floorboard for that near one of the seats of the fire, and we got a result.
Really?
Yes, indeed. Oh, and of course, I double-checked the headspace analysis against a separate artifact from the debris, this time by the steam distillation process.
Mr. Barnaby?
Anyway, to cut a long story short, the result was the same.
What result?
Petrol.
So, in plain speaking, the room was doused in petrol and set alight.
Well, if you want to put it like that. But it wasn't really doused. That's a bit unscientific.
Mr. Barnaby, that's exactly how I want to put it, and I'm not a scientist, so I dare say I'll get away with it. Now, can I have your written report?
Actually, Mr. Donahue, I haven't managed to type it up yet, but
well,
I...
Well, perhaps you'd better go off and do that now. This is a murder investigation, and it would be nice to get it underway before the ashes go cold.
Yes, sir.
You wanted to see me, sir?
Yes, come in, Tony. Mr. Barnaby's just going. Oh, and,
Mr. Barnaby.
Sir?
Just fax that report through, save your legs. And my sanity. Right, Tony, have a seat.
Sir.
Yes, that was Dr. Kay's new assistant. It's a long time since I've had to talk with such a tiresome individual. My head's split it asunder, I can tell you. Anyway, the upshot is that, you know, it is a long time since I've had to talk with such a tiresome individual. But the upshot is that the locust was doused with petrol in two places and set alight.
So, in other words, much the same as before, except for the younger victim and the two-seater fire, of course.
Yes. I mean, who is this guy? No prints, no messages to the papers, nothing. And we can't watch all the elderly men in the East End, not with our manpower. You know, Tony, what I don't like about serial killers is that they put you under so much pressure. That's three now, and we can expect a fourth and a fifth. And the victim's younger this time. He's spicing up the game. You saw the locust?
Yes, sir. I'm writing up the report now. Sergeant Sussick and myself attended. The chief fire officer just pointed out the indications of suspicious circumstances and left us to it.
Suspicious is hardly the word. Where's Sussick now?
He's at the GRI, sir, attending the post-mortem.
Good. And what are your movements when you've written up?
Well, home to bed, sir. I was supposed to finish at 6.
Ah, yes. You're on the night shift, of course. I hadn't realised. 11 a.m. Who's in the day shift?
Sergeant Sussick, D.C. King, D.C. Montgomery's out as well. The sergeant asked me to phone him, get him to come in early. He and Richard are talking to the neighbours, I think.
I see. Well, I'd like you to stay on, Tony. I'm sorry. I know you're tired, but you'll find your second wind. We're conferencing the so-called Torchman murders in here at 2 p.m., and I'd like you to be present. You can go home afterwards. I'll give you 5 or 6 hours before you're back on at 10. Okay?
Very good, sir.
He was harmless, as far as I could see. A toothless early chip. What did he do? Leave the gas on? We could take a good drink. My cousin went like that, go dressed him. Come here where I could drink them. Fancied a bite, so put a light under the chip pan, went into the living room, fell asleep on the sofa and didn't wake up. The smoke got before the flames, so they say. But the house, oh, it was pure gutted. Oh, they were me chip pan. He'd be the same, I suppose.
I'm not allowed to say what happened, I'm afraid. Do you know if he had any friends or enemies, Mrs. McCain?
Enemies? Oh, suspicious, is it? Foul play. Oh, well, I can see. Nain and your son, he kept his cell to his cell, took a drink, as I say, but he didn't work due to his invalidity.
And what was that?
Oh, I don't know. But he got his jar on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
See, my man, Tam, he gets his jar on a Thursday. Got it this morning, like.
Mm-hmm.
But Willie McBride, I get his on a Tuesday, so he was an invalidity benefit. That's how I know.
And did you see him often?
Only Tuesdays. Walking to the Legion.
Right.
That's basically where he jumped the Legion. The cheap booze, you know. And sometimes you'd see him staggering back. I don't think he was ever married either. Kept his cell to his cell, what I say. Never made a sound.
Never?
Well, a couple of nights ago.
Uh-huh.
Tuesday would have been. We heard a noise. I tapped him up to it. He was normally that quiet. Has flared our ceiling, you see, so we can hear all what's going on. Anyway, it was like a crash, as if he'd fell down drunk. Then he gets up again. Or at least he starts walking around like he's just fell and picked himself up. A wee while later that, he starts banging in a flare, like he was maybe kneeling down a carpet or something. Maybe he tripped out it. Anyway, that was him then. No, I squeaked at him.
And you didn't think to check? Like, even the next day?
No, I'm telling you, Charlie, I've made this sound, so that was normal for him. Besides, why didn't he want to cut if he was drunk? Wicked that batch of swine in the drink. Swear what a trooper. And we heard him in the morning anyway, walking about.
Oh, you heard him the next morning?
Well, it couldn't have been anybody else. At least that's what I thought. Seen the scheme, son. They're saying it was Torchman that done it. You know him that's been in the papers. Is that him?
I can't see.
God almighty, son. What if it was that Torchman up there in poor Lally?
Mrs. McKee, you say he had no enemies?
No, none that I know.
And what about family?
Nah, none of these things either. Nobody's child right enough, eh? You can ask him, the Legion.
Aye, my mate's there already, Mrs. McCabe. We found his membership card in the flat.
One sour old bugger, if you ask me. Came in every Tuesday lunchtime. Stayed till he drunk his fill. Sat in that seat in the corner. On his toad, mostly. Don't know much about his history.
What was he? Army or Navy?
Neither. Not Air Force either.
Oh, I thought the Legion only...
No, you thought wrong. You don't have to be a serviceman. Willie had what's called Associate Civilian Membership. Means he teamed up with our next RN guy in some pub out in the scheme there. He proposed him, and he was accepted. The RN guy moved down south eventually, and Willie worked his way into the bricks. He was only here for the beer, as they say. Never did anything for Legion. Anyway, just came in here till his drinking money was shot.
Well, I suppose you know what's happened to him. Had he any enemies?
You need to have friends first, and he never spoke to anybody. Just sat brooding.
So, was it this Torchman right enough? I've heard the gossip.
Can't say either way.
I mean, that's three in the East End since January.
Aye. So, when did Willie McBride join the Legion? Makes it sound like the Foreign Legion.
Aye, you might be right. Oh, it would be about 5 or 6 years ago, something like that. I think he liked to fancy himself as an old soldier.
How do you mean?
Well, it's nothing you could put your finger on. But you got the feeling he never spoke because he wanted to forget his past. I mean, he never tried to pass himself off as an old soldier. Nah, he wouldn't have got away with that in here. But it was as if he was content to let people see him just sitting there, staring into space. Like he was remembering old comrades or something. Refighting old battles. You know what I mean? Well, that's just my feeling, though.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Not at your best, Ray. Black clouds over Rutherglen again. Ray?
Sorry, I'm miles away. No, they're a permanent fixture. Where is the life that late I led, eh?
A Shakespeare, isn't it?
Well, I remember it as Howard Keel singing at Catherine Grayson. And if you can remember that, you've every right to be depressed. And don't ask who's Howard Keel. No, actually, I was thinking about McBride. The late William McBride.
Yes. It's a terrible business.
Well, yeah. His death and his life both. On his own in that god-awful dump. I could get morbid about it, Elka, if I'm not careful.
I'm just tired, Gray. What have you had to eat, Have you had any breakfast?
Yeah, I did, actually. Toast and marmalade. Somebody else's, it happens. That's bedsit life for you. Dear God, Elka. A serving police officer, and I'm stealing somebody's marmalade.
Thrill seeker.
Yeah, well, I suppose it makes up for my tea bags and the cheese. Mice that can open fridges. Do you think I should tell the newspapers?
See... You're brightening up already.
Yeah, I suppose so. What about you? Is that all you're having?
It's for speed. I've got to go out with Phil Hamilton as soon as he gets back in.
Quarry Bray Street?
Yes, the DI wants us to do a thorough search. Fine tooth comb. We've been warned to take over also. I expect the place will be grotty, apart from the rest.
Yeah, typical old bachelor pad. I know it well. Anyway, I suppose I'll catch you later. Oh, hey, you couldn't check and see if he's left any tea bags.
Oh, you're evil, Sussex. You really are.
I don't remember it being called the invisible thread, though.
Yeah. The idea is there's an invisible thread 6 feet long between you and your partner when you're doing a search. Mm. And it's not to be broken. It's for your own protection. I mean, if you find a hoard of cash, you can count it together there and then. So if they subsequently turn up a relative and they say there was a crock of gold under the floorboards, you can't be accused of stealing. Well, not on your own anyway. Elka? Elka! What are you doing in there?
Did they say the name was McBride?
Eh?
Bill? Did they say his name was McBride?
Yeah, that's the name on the door, isn't it?
Uh-huh. But there's letters in here addressed to somebody called Dylan. See, Alexander Dylan, care of McBride, 1 up left, 227 Quarry Bray Street.
That's funny. He's supposed to have been a loner.
This one's recent. Look, dated last Friday. Thought it would have arrived Saturday or Monday. It's Social Security, notifying him about the change in his benefit, the November increase. And that means this Dylan person has been here some time. It's not a new claim.
What do you reckon?
Well, this is hot stuff. A one-person flat, only one man's possessions in it. Look, the form gives his date of birth. He's supposed to sign and verify the details. April the 12th, 1938. That would make him 56. That's about right. You know what I think, Phil?
What? This house is a mail drop for one of his mates?
Well, I don't see any letters here addressed to McBride, do you? See, look. Housing Department, DSS, Library, all addressed to Mr. A. Dillon, care of McBride. Phil, this is the home of one Alexander Dillon and none other.
What? The guy's just been calling himself McBride?
No, he hasn't changed his name as such. He just uses an alias for everyday purposes. But officially, it's Alexander Dillon. Better call this in. WPC Villains, control.
Control receiving.
WPC Villains, control. In attendance at the code 41-227 Quarry Bray Street, House of McBride. Information for D.I. Donahue. Deceased may also be known as Alexander Dillon. Repeat, Alexander Dillon, 56 years. Over.
Control WPC Willems, Alexander Dillon, 56 years. Message understood. Control out.
Did you start a flap? Okay, Phil, we better press on. You do the drawers in that dresser from the bottom up. I'm just glad it's a tenement and there isn't a cellar. Oh, God, look at this. Didn't this guy ever wash his clothes? You better get some extra gloves, Phil. There's life in this drawer, but not as we know it.
Is everybody here, right?
Yes, sir.
Good. Shall I make a start? Now, if you'd like to review the investigation.
Well, sir, I've drawn up a few notes. We are all broadly familiar with the case, but this is the first overview. The so-called Torchman murders. If I can just summarise. The first incident took place on January 31st, a Friday, when an elderly man, John Keegan, was overpowered, rendered unconscious and incinerated in his flat. The second incident was similar in every respect. Same sort of victim, elderly male, one Tim Marshall, same M.O. As you know, sir, that second incident caused us to believe we might have a serial killer on our hands, and the press dubbed him Torchman. We made the routine announcement to ask all elderly people to be on their guard, but some of them would let the devil himself in for a wee bit of company.
Remind me when the second incident took place.
March 25th, sir, Wednesday, so no apparent pattern in the days of the week, and a fair gap nearly 2 months between them. And, of course, both of these and subsequently the third incident took place in the east end of the city. The first in Carlton, Claythorne Street, then Bridgeton, Dalcer Street, and this morning in Parkhead at Quarry Bridge.
So, if anything, he seems to be edging further east, but it's possibly not significant.
And there's a gap of nearly 7 months between the Bridgeton attack and this one. Sir, I understand this morning's victim is now believed to be called Dylan. Not McBride.
Well, yes, DC King's got some feedback on that, but carry on, please.
Right, sir. Other similarities include the fact that there appears to be no forced entry, all the victims were in their day clothing, according to the remnants found on the corpses, but the fires were all started in the small hours, and in each case, the accelerant was petrol.
You've obviously been reading young Mr. Barnaby's report.
Anyway, The implication is that entry was gained in the evening and the perpetrator waited with his victim for several hours, possibly, before dousing him with petrol and departing the locus.
And no witnesses to any of the incidents, no signs of robbery, no messages left for us or the press. Good, that's fine, Ray. Now, the third victim seems to represent a departure from the pattern, though, doesn't he? D.C. Montgomery, perhaps you'd like to take it on from there?
Yes, sir. This McBride, or Dillon, wasn't particularly old. 57.
I'm pleased to hear you don't consider that old. Sorry, go on.
Well, he was also nailed to the floor. The other two weren't restrained, and don't seem to have tried to get away from the flames, so they were presumably unconscious. Again, they'd had the petrol poured on them direct, and McBride, or Dillon, was pinned down between two seats of fire, where the petrol had been poured onto the furniture.
So, a slight deviation in terms of the victim's age and the MO. DC Abernethy.
Well, sir, as I understand it, there's also the post-mortem evidence that the perpetrator remained with the victim a far longer period, probably 2 days, as against a few hours with the others. And there were no fingerprints at any locus, but evidence of gloved hands. That's about it, sir.
Good. Thank you, gentlemen. That's clear and concise. Now, the latest development. WPC Willems and PC Hamilton are presently carrying out a search of the locus, and thanks to the WPC's sharp eyes picking up on a batch of letters, it appears that the actual name of the deceased is Alexander Dillon. DC King, will you oblige?
Yes, sir. I've passed this information down to the collator, and Mr. Dillon has the track record. The details are all here in this file. Alexander Dillon was convicted of murder 15 years ago, the sexual assault and murder of a 9-year-old boy, Russell French.
Now you know why McBride changed his name.
Mind if I have a look at that, sir?
No, go ahead. Not very pleasant reading. In fact, it's about as unpleasant as crime gets. The child was abducted and held for 2 days before being murdered.
And to think I felt sorry for that toothless old swine.
Toothless? You should have been that, Sarge.
Sorry?
Well, the sergeant said he was toothless. And this morning, when we were at the house, there was a piece of cheese in the kitchen. Well, there was a pile of unwashed plates and so on at the sink, and a lump of cheese with tooth marks in it. I'm almost certain.
D.C. King, as soon as this conference is over, I'd like you to go to the locus and recover that piece of cheese.
Right.
If it's as you say, Abernethy, the teeth impressions might well belong to the perpetrator.
Well, Dillon might have had dentures, of course.
Yeah, well, we'll let the forensic lab tell us that. Preferably by fax.
Hello? Excuse me?
Yes?
Can I ask you if you stay in that close? I don't think we've spoken to you.
No, I don't.
You know the flat's sealed off. You weren't wanting to go in there, were you?
No.
You seem very interested in it.
Just looking.
I'm sorry, can I ask you why?
No reason. I heard the wee man get killed.
Uh-huh. Would you mind giving me your name, please, Mrs...
What for?
I'm sorry?
Because you're acting suspiciously. Will that do?
Looking at a burned-out flat is acting suspiciously.
Your name, please.
Do I have to give it?
No, but you can always be charged with obstructing the police in the exercise of their duties.
It's Silver. Annette Silver. Braidfold Street.
Do you have anything with your name on it?
No.
A library ticket, a social security book, letters. Are you quite sure you've nothing?
Oh, I forgot. Here. It's an invalidity allowance. It's got my name and address.
Thank you.
You know, the thought occurs to me. That 9-year-old boy would have had relatives. Dillon was discharged from the state hospital, what, 3 years ago?
You think it could be a revenge killing, sir?
Well, we've nothing else to go on at the moment, and it's just possible that the other two murders might have been camouflage. We imagine we're dealing with a serial killer, so we're not looking for the motive. And if the killer's doing a thorough job, we might expect one or two more Torchman murders just to cover his tracks.
It's a bit far-fetched, sir, is it not?
What do you think, Ray?
I don't know. It's probably a blind alley. On the other hand, it might give us a line on all three murders.
I don't see any other way forward, do you?
No, not really, sir.
All right, gentlemen. Worth a shot?
Yeah, I'll go for
that. I'll go for that one as well.
Ray! Richard! What brings you back here?
Afternoon, chaps. I've come for the cheese, believe it or not.
Cheese?
Yeah, with an interesting bite out of it. There's a lump of cheese in the kitchen sink. I hope you didn't touch it.
Oh, you mean that bit I put in my cream cracker?
Very funny.
You didn't suspect her enough to go after her?
Well, no, sir.
You sound surprised, Constable Willems.
To be frank, sir, I am.
Hamilton?
Yes, sir.
All right. You report that you noticed a woman paying more than usual attention to the locus of the code 4-1 involving the deceased Alexander Dillon. You rightly questioned her, then allowed her to walk away.
We saw proof of her ID, sir. We saw her order book.
You saw an order book, WPC Willems. In fact, you saw an invalidity benefit book, but you've described a woman in her mid to late 30s who was mobile enough to walk away from the locus.
Yes, sir.
You see my concern.
I'm sorry, sir. I just assumed...
No, try and assume as little as possible, and don't act on assumption. That's a dangerous game. Same goes for you, Hamilton.
Sir, she may be mentally ill. That would qualify her for invalidity benefit. If she was long-term...
No, you're clutching at straws now. The point is that what you were offered as proof of her ID did not sit at all well with her appearance. Did she speak as though she was mentally ill?
No. No, sir, she didn't.
Well. What's the time? 2:30. You were supposed to finish at 2, but I think it's not unfair to ask you to tidy this up first. You at least have a name and address. If you're lucky, you'll find it's the same person. After all, you're the only ones who know what she looks like. Yes, dear Donahue. Oh, Mr. Barnaby, hello, yeah. Yes, found at the locust. I sent D.C. King to retrieve it. Yes. Yeah. Yes, look, I'm sorry, Mr. Barnaby, I'm in the middle of a case conference. Why don't you jot all that down on a side of A4 and fax it through? Yes, fine, good. Yes, I'll look forward to that. Thank you, goodbye. That's a stroke of luck, and I don't mean getting Barnaby off the phone. Seems our forensic people are playing host this week to a visiting orthodontist. Some big cheese in the teeth field. I know. I couldn't resist it.
Elka, hang on a second. I'll catch you up.
Oh, God, I'm sorry, Ray. Donahue's just chewed up Phil Hamilton and me for not getting an ID properly. I'll be on duty for another hour at least.
Damn, that's a pity. I thought we'd have both been on the same shift this week. We'd at least have a bit more time. We're supposed to be having an early dinner.
It's okay, Ray. Don't worry. You go on out to Langside and let yourself in. I'll be home by 4 at the absolute latest. Come on, old Suffolk. Don't look so woebegone. You can make yourself some toast, but don't start without me.
Toast? Elka, where's all that touch and concern you were showing me this morning? Does that mean it's all right if I borrow your marmalade?
Ray, you're incorrigible. Nibble something if you have to, but I don't want you spoiling your appetite. Okay?
Is that a promise?
Appetite, I said.
Come.
You wanted to see me, sir?
Ah, yes, Richard, come on in. I thought you should be the first to see the orthodontist's report on the cheese. Oh. Turning out to be a very ripe item.
A woman? Front upper incisor split badly, slightly overlapped. Bottom left incisor broken, some bridge work. How does he work out as a woman?
Late 30s, receding chin.
No, believe it, all that from a lump of sweaty teeth.
Well, yes, that's my reaction. Well, Richard, what do you think? Is it possible?
What, sir?
The torch man's a woman.
I'm coming. I'm sorry. I was watching the TV and didn't bother getting into my chair.
That's all right. Is this Annette Silver's address?
Yes, that's me. What can I do for you?
Miss Silver, do you live alone?
Yes, I've gone solo from the hostel. Independent living, just myself. Is it to do with the burglary last year? No.
Miss Silver, have you given your order book to anybody?
No, just Sadie, my home help. She keeps it and cashes it for me every Tuesday.
Sadie?
Sadie French, uh-huh.
I see. And where can we reach her?
The social work department, I think. The Toll Cross office.
Thanks. Thank you for your help.
What, is there something up?
No, Miss Silver. Nothing to worry about. Thanks again.
Oh.
Phil, do me a favour.
Check out Toll Cross.
No, she isn't. Not at the minute, anyway. She only works mornings. You'll get her on Monday.
Do you know her address? It's quite important.
Aye, I know, but she'll not be there. She's away to see her wee brother. That's where she goes every Friday afternoon. Well, not unless she's got something special for him. Then she'll not wait for a Friday.
So where does her brother live?
Nowhere.
What's that supposed to mean?
What it says. He's up in the Western Necropolis. Winter's coming on now, wee man. You remember yon way? Rain and dark nights, wee pal. In the long drag up to Christmas now. I'll be in my own as usual. I'm not complaining. I'll get a bottle of port. That'll do me. Just dig myself in for 2 or 3 days and emerge with a new year. Aye, it was a fine mess, Russell. You'd have been proud of me. Maybe you are. Maybe you can see all this. But the place was gutted when him dead. I did a grand job right enough. And I knew that he went to the Legion on Tuesdays. I came back with a good drink then. So, I just waited for him on the stair. And when he opened his door, that's when I hit him. A couple of times, maybe. I mean, you think he's an animal. Some kind of monster that could do that to you, Russell. But when it comes to the bit, he's useless. A kid-own man, really. Anyway, I didn't want him getting up. So, I dragged him into the living room, rummaged round a bit, got a hammer and nails. Aye, like Christ crucified he was. And when he came round, I let him smell the petrol. And I stayed with him 2 days, Russell. Because that's how long he kept you. At the end, he's just lying there, whimpering. You can rest a bit easier now, wee man. Hey, look at this, Russell. Can you see? It's the same ones that spoke to me earlier. I told you about them. I just wonder how they found me so quick. I mean, I used gloves. Got that off the TV. I'll try and get off as light as I can. If I'm not here for a year or so, you'll know why. At least I've told you. Just so as you know why. That's all that matters. Anyway, that's your stone all nice and clean now. It'll last a wee while. I'd better go and meet them. I don't want them near you. I don't want you to see your big sister getting lifted. Just you lie at peace, Russell. And I'll be back. Don't worry. Cheerio, wee man.
Steady, friends!
It was a combination of things, since you're admitting to the third murder.
That's the only one I am admitting. Do you think I could have a cigarette?
In a minute, Sadie. We've got all night here, you know.
I've been here all night already. And you haven't said how you knew it was me.
You pushed yourself into the frame, coming back to the locus like that.
Two police officers spoke to you, just doing their duty, and you couldn't satisfy them. And there's the cheese you had a bite out of.
You can do that?
Oh, yes. But since you're putting your hand up for this particular murder, it hardly matters. So it was revenge all along.
Aye. After what you did to her, Russell. It killed my parents too with that. And a wee bit of me. Well, you did the same, Mr.
Donoghue.
Aye.
He was mad, do you know, Sadie? Not responsible for his actions.
Oh, no. Oh, no, Mr. Donoghue. When he came round, after I'd hit him, and he found himself like that, nailed to the floor, and I told him who I was and asked him if he could remember Russell, he knew all right. He knew what he'd done. And if he knew, he wasn't mad. He even said he was sorry. A madman wouldn't have said that, eh? Anyway, I don't care what happens to me. That's it. It's all tied up real neat now. I can all rest a lot easier. And I've got nobody. There's nobody out there to worry about me.
Sadie, I'm sorry to hear that. And I can understand why you did that to Alexander Dillon. That's not to say what you did was right. But I can understand. But what about the other two men? What harm had they done you?
You're still going on about that.
I am. And we've got all night. You'll have an alibi for the other two murders.
I might. But I live on my own and I don't keep a diary.
So what was it, Sadie? Were you practicing, Sadie, to make sure you could do it when it came to Dillon?
I told you, I didn't do the other two.
Or were you hoping to kid us on? We had some nutter on the loose.
I didn't do the other two.
I mean, you can see why we're asking, can't you? All men, all living on their own in the East End.
I'm telling you, I know nothing about them. All right. I read about them in the record. That Torchman thing. Well, that maybe put the idea in my mind. But what I'd like to do to Dillon. But that was it.
Sadie, you top two harmless old men so you'd get it right.
I did not.
Were you going to do two or three more, maybe? So we wouldn't look at Dillon's murder too closely.
I didn't do them, I'm telling you.
Oh, damn, I know they're not... Oh. See what they want, Richard, and it better be important.
Right, sir.
This interview is halted at 0211 on Friday the 28th of November to allow D.C. King to leave the room. You know, Sadie, off the record, people we interview in this room, you either work for yourself or against yourself. And I have to say, you're doing yourself no good at all. Sadie, it's only a matter of time before you tell us.
Can I speak to you outside, sir?
Look, is it relevant to this inquiry?
I believe it is,
then
sir.
Tell me.
Sir,
now, Richard.
It's a code 41, sir. East End, just called in. An old man living alone, burned to death.
Oh.
Torch Manny. Can I have that cigarette now, Mr. Donoghue?
please.
In Long Pig, the part of Detective Sergeant Ray Sussock was played by Jake Darcy, D.C. Abernethy by Andrew Conlon, and D.C. Montgomery by Frank Gallagher. D.I. Donahue was played by Crawford Logan, W.P.C. Elka Willems by Eliza Langland, and P.C. Hamilton by Martin McCarty. D.C. King was played by Liam Brennan, and Dr. Reynolds by Gerard Slevin. Fireman Mark Cox, Station Officer Gilbert Martin, Barnaby Simon Christie, Mrs. McCabe Anne Downey, Annette Sandra McNeely, and Sadie was played by Donalda Samuel. Long Pig was written by Peter Turnbull, dramatised by Stephen Mulrine, and recorded on location in Glasgow and in our studios in Edinburgh. The director was Hamish Wilson.